Hi, I'm Isabel Cruz and my pronouns are she, her. I'm the editorial content intern for the Center for Sustainable Development. And today I'll be interviewing Dr. Wanda Ebright about the Black Lives Matter movement as well as racism in America. The Center for Sustainable Development at the College of Charleston really focuses on engaging students and the campus community as well as the Charleston community in conversations about all facets of sustainability. So part of our podcast series is that we want to talk about a range of topics, and we really just want to engage as many perspectives as we can, as many diverse perspectives as we can. So that's why we have Dr. Ebright here today, and I'll go ahead and let her introduce herself to you all.
Hi, my name is Dr. Wanda Ebright. I am Associate Dean and Director of Graduate Studies for the College of Visual and Performing Arts at Winthrop University. We're in Rock Hill, South Carolina, and I'm an Associate Professor of Dance.
And so today, how we're going to go through this is I'm going to have several questions for Dr. Ebright, as well as vocabulary to go along with it, that are from Ibram Kendi's book, How to Be an Anti-Racist, that was part of a reading group for the Center for Sustainable Development's summer interns this year. So we'll just be pairing the vocabulary with some of the topics and questions that I'll be asking to make it easier to understand and to maybe add some clarity to some of these really big vocab words that we need to understand as we're talking about the movement itself and what's going on today in current events. So my first question for you is just going to be, how would you define the mission of the Black Lives Matter movement?
In my words, not theirs, the mission of the Black Lives Matter movement is to protect and save Black lives, which doesn't seem like something that ought to be necessary, but our country has a history both in physical violence and also in a type of violence that happens through systemic racism, systemic policies that have prohibited payment of wealth, have stopped people from owning houses or property, that gets in the way of business loans, and all kinds of things that help keep Black people in this country from achieving the same levels of socioeconomic growth and wealth. And so to ask that, I think that is wrapped up in this idea of violence against Black lives. So we're just trying, the movement is trying to make it possible to stop the violence against Black people physically and socioeconomically.
And one of the vocab words I do want to bring up is being an anti-racist. So this is, in the book, Kendi describes it as one who's supporting anti-racist policy through their actions or expressing an anti-racist thought or idea, so one who's expressing the idea that racial groups are equals and none needs developing and is supporting policy that reduces racial inequity. Mm-hmm. How do you think we should be anti-racist, especially when there are conflicting opinions about this, or people may not understand exactly how systemic racism works and how Black people don't have as many opportunities? How do you think we can really be anti-racist in today's society and have a productive and engaging conversation about that with people who may not understand the movement or may just have different opinions than ours?
I think a lot of it is people not understanding the movement and not wanting to listen long enough to hear what it's really about. It's easier to just keep believing what you believe than to have somebody challenge what you believe. I think in terms of changing the issues that exist already for Black people in America, it's not, I think, first of all, it's important for people to realize that change can happen on an infinite number of levels. It doesn't have to only be laws. It doesn't have to only be, this concept of pro or anti-police. It doesn't have to only be this idea or misperception that is people asking for a handout, because as you were saying, with anti-racist mindsets and activism, what people are wanting is not necessarily for you just to say, oh, well, let's set aside some money just for Black people, okay, or let's create these social programs just for them and take care of them because they can't take care of themselves. That is not what we're asking for. That is not what the Black Lives Matter movement is about. It is about the fact that if somebody's always giving you a little small allowance, a little piece of something to try and help appease you and make you say, well, at least they gave me a scrap of food today, so I should be grateful, rather than saying,
let's take away the barriers that allow everyone to work. Mm-hmm. Let's take away the barriers that make it only possible for some people to buy a home or to own a car or other things like that or run a business. Then you actually change it and we can all eat. We can all eat whatever we want to eat instead of just what somebody is willing to give us. So some of it is that mindset. So yes, we do need those kind of policy changes. But you can be anti-racist just by looking at your kids' textbooks and seeing if you flip through their textbook and the only photos you see are photos of happy white children and nobody else, that's a problem. Mm-hmm. And you should ask questions about it and ask your school district, why are we using a book that doesn't look like our demographics? You can, when you go to open house at your child's school, you can look around the walls and if the posters you see on the wall only show white children or white teachers, that's a problem. Ask people questions about that. Hold mm-hmm. them accountable. If you see right now there's a flood online of people and corporations saying that they support Black Lives Matter or support inclusion or diversity or equity, but what's really great right now is a lot of people who are actively anti-racist are calling them out and going, you're saying this in this ad on Instagram, but when we look at your board of directors, there's not a single person of color, not a single woman mm-hmm. involved. So do our lives really matter? Or if you're saying all lives matter, if that's your response, are we seeing that? Or are we still seeing you only protect your life and people who look and act like you? So just my suggestion would be for people to remember, you can make changes without going to a protest, without necessarily changing a law, though we need people to push for that as well. But just by looking at your family friends, if your kids never ever play with kids that aren't the exact same race that they are, you might want to ask yourself why that is. Because there's probably something that you grew up with that is telling you they should only play with kids that look like them. Why is that? What are you trying to protect them from? What is that inherent bias that says it's dangerous to have friends that look different?
Mm-hmm. Right? So. And I think that's important to remember too, is even if we are, anti-racist, we can be, we all have moments where we
are racist and where we have that internalized bias and sometimes we don't realize that. And I think a lot of people are afraid to admit that. And I'll admit, even in past, I have as well. Because I want to be an ally, I want to support, I want to advocate for just for people who don't look at the same as me, who don't have the same experience as me. But a lot of times it's hard because we have, like you were saying, even in textbooks and just in the structure of schools, neighborhoods, a lot of times it's not always, you're not getting as many perspectives as you think or that you want to have around you. So I think that's also important, is to be willing to admit when you are wrong or when you have a previous experience that maybe makes you have that internalized bias, and to just bring light to it so other people notice as well. I think that's important.
Exactly. It's not about people wanting to punish any other, socioeconomic group or any other demographic.
Self-love of whatever your own race or background or heritage or gender is not, the opposite of loving everybody else. Mm-hmm. It's okay to be proud to be Black and still like everybody else. And it's the same for everyone else. We're not asking people to beat themselves up over what has happened before. We're asking you, let's start now. Let's start now and fix it. That's all.
The question I wanted to ask is just, what are some common terms and phrases that relate to the Black Lives Matter movement and racism that you believe need clarification, that maybe there's some misconceptions about different verbiage that you would like to bring up?
Well, I think the first one that comes up for me a lot is, as an educator, it happens in my classroom a lot, that I'll come into class and students are already discussing, debating, arguing about things. And so the biggest one that I see is just the use of the word privilege, mm-hmm. because everybody's defining it differently. And in my experience, the white students that I have taught immediately bristle at the word because they feel like you're saying that they're rich and they come from a ton of money, and a lot of them are not. They're middle class.
Some have really struggled. Some are homeless and, you know, just don't disclose it to everybody. So then what I try to do is make sure that I make a space in my classroom for the students of color who are arguing about privilege, and my white students who are offended by the term. I try to get them to hear each other out about what they're frustrated about. And then I come in and say, let's recognize that this word is not defined the same way, the way each of you are speaking about it. Let's get back to what each of you are really trying to say. In communities of color, people are not saying that privilege is you being rich or having more money than us. We're saying that if you get pulled over for a taillight that's out, you're not struck with fear. And we are.
Mm-hmm.
I am, even in Fort Mill, and nothing bad has ever happened to me in Fort Mill, South Carolina. But if I see flashing lights behind me, my first thought is, am I going to live through this? It's a privilege to not have that fear. Like, I kind of want to cry about it now. But if you've never had that feeling, if you've only ever thought, that's ridiculous, it's just a police officer, what's the big deal?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was speeding, or I did have a light out. Who knew? You know, if you are able to have that thought,
mm-hmm.
that is a privilege.
Mm-hmm.
Because there aren't enough of you being killed for no reason to have to think about it. So it seems absurd that anyone else has to think about it, but we do.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have to, you know, when I worked at Johnson C. Smith University, and historically black school in Charlotte, the fact that we needed to have officers come in and talk to black males about how not to die when they're pulled over, that's not something that happens when I work in predominantly white institutions.
Mm-hmm.
People don't come in and go, we're going to talk to students about how to de-escalate a routine traffic stop. You know, like,
yeah.
You don't have to have that conversation. So that's what they're talking about by privilege. And if people can't hear that, and then they're choosing to stay angry about the myth that people think that they're rich and that money is the answer to everything.
Mm-hmm.
That's not it. I think other terms, even just racism or racist, that, you know, there are a lot of people who would argue that black people or people of color can't be racist. But my experience has shown me otherwise, is I've gotten in just as much trouble defending my faculty of color when I was department chair at an historically black school from racism as I get into trouble advocating for hires of color in the predominantly white institutions where I've worked. Racism isn't owned by any one race. It's a constructed term anyway that doesn't really mean anything. But anybody can be racist. Anyone can have racist thoughts. Anyone can have racist belief systems that they didn't even know they had until somebody challenges. And it's really uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And they just, you know, get used to the discomfort and have the conversation. It's only a conversation. Those are probably the two terms that I hear the most about and am constantly trying to help students and colleagues kind of find middle ground on.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I know I'm long-winded.
I find that as well.
When you're talking about just privilege in general, because I have discussions about it, and just, you know, as simple as being on campus, getting the same opportunities on campus, the same internships, and the same just being treated equally, is even just on a small scale level, just simple everyday interactions and things. And a lot of people will say, well, there's scholarships and they want diversity, so they'll include more people of color, so there isn't a problem. It's actually easier for them to get in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to have that conversation too, because yes, there are certain scholarships like that. There are certain, you want to have diversity on campus, but also if you look at the majority of public and private universities, a lot of the times, if it's not a historically black college or university, the demographics are skewed. Even if they are, I think a lot of times when people think about that, they assume the privilege in that regard and getting into school goes to people of color, when in fact it really doesn't. And
Exactly. It's something that people get told by people who are in power and want to maintain that power. They want to stay in control. And keeping people upset keeps people in control.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always about who is benefiting from this situation and looking there.
In Kenny's book, he actually speaks a lot about how it's not always about ignorance and hate, it's about self-interest. And that's why a lot of the policies get made, that's why different ways that big institutions conduct themselves or have, you know, written in their policies as well. A lot of times it's from self-interest who's benefiting. And then I just wanted to also ask about positive outcomes that you've seen from the Black Lives Matters movement so far. Because I know there is a lot of controversy over the movement. You don't always see those positive effects right after. People don't notice them. They choose not to notice them. So just what are some positive outcomes that you've seen from it already that you'd like to discuss?
Sure. Well, first, actually, there's one term that I didn't give you that is really important, and it's linked to that for me, to this answer, is
people misuse the word protest, or the people who are against the Black Lives Matter movement love to say a riot was held today.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to a peaceful protest was held. So I think people need to be careful about the term that they use. Black Lives Matter is always about peaceful protest, nonviolent protest. When it gets turned, it usually is turned by other people who are coming and infiltrating to try and keep the movement from making progress. But flipping back to positivity, I think what means the world to me as an individual Black woman is looking out at the peaceful protests prior to people coming and ruining, that the makeup of the crowd, the people who are protesting, are every race, every gender, every color, every nationality, that there are protests in other countries in support of the movement here. I love, as we were saying earlier, that when companies are claiming that they are all about diversity, equity, and inclusion, people are calling them out on it now. People are going, really? Because I don't see it. And we're not going to let you get away with that statement. You're going to have to answer for it.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do about it? And that pressure is not only coming from the Black community. It's coming from a huge, like, cut across all demographics. And so I think that's fantastic, which is probably why it's working now. I think I'm seeing people have conversations now instead of just shouting matches.
Mm-hmm.
Even just on my campus and in my neighborhood communities, when people disagree about things, they're coming back calmer and asking specific questions rather than just shouting at and insulting people. I think I would like to think that the country is getting tired of staying furious and rude to each other. And so I'm hoping it signals, you know, a little bit of a return to civility. Civility does not mean that you just agree with everything.
Mm-hmm.
People are allowed to disagree. It's very much like a family, right? I may disagree with everything some of my relatives do, but I still love them, and I don't want any harm to come to them. That's what we're looking for from the country, and I feel like the fact that the movement has so much broad support right now, and the fact that people aren't just dropping it after a week or two, this is not a phase, this is not a fad, this is the movement. It's a real push for change, and people will not be satisfied, and they will not be quiet. People are going to have to make some changes. I think that's wonderful. It's wonderful. And there will always be somebody scared about those changes, because whoever is benefiting from biased policies now is going to feel like they're being attacked and something's being taken away.
Mm-hmm.
Fairness always seems unfair to people who were privileged before, who had a privileged position of power before. But there's no reason that we can't negotiate that so that things are good for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing, too, you're talking about just the wide scope of people that are involved in the movement. One of the biggest things for me was just across ages as well, and seeing
young children be part of just walks around the neighborhood as part of peaceful just marches to support the Black Lives Matter movement. Teacher at my public middle school, I'm Fort Mill, Banks Trail Middle School, and her daughter, Jasmine, led a march. She saw it on the news. She was hearing things about it. Her mom's really good talking to her about it.
I saw a video clip, yes.
And she led a march in her neighborhood. I just thought it was amazing that this little girl, I mean, it's hurts a little bit to know that a child feels the need to do that, but it was just amazing, though, that she and her friends just went on a march together in neighborhood. Kids just coming together, wearing their masks and making little signs and marching. I think that's also powerful, too, because they're the ones that are also going to grow up. And I think that's important that parents are acknowledging. We do need to tell our kids about these problems. We do need to find a way to discuss this, not just with college-age students or high school students that can
have
conversations.
We don't have to wait that long. It's great.
Exactly. There's a lot to cover with this movement, but I really think that talking to you about this has really helped me understand a little bit more, and I hope that as listeners, this has been a good conversation for you to hear. Regardless of what your experiences are, your beliefs, or anything, I think it's important to hear the other side of the conversation. And I get sometimes it's hard to have those conversations. Luckily, people are able to. But if you can't talk to somebody in person about it, or you don't feel you're educated enough about it, I think it's good to be able to listen to podcasts and videos like this, where you might be able to gain some of the vocabulary and to better understand. Is there anything else that you would like to close with today?
I would just encourage you, remember, in our communities of color, and when I talk about communities of color,
it also means all colors, it also means genders, nationalities, whatever, but
speaking for me, for
people of color, I have to remind myself that, especially when I get frustrated because the friends of mine who are white are really quiet during these times sometimes, I find it's really helpful and really important in terms of breaking down their fear to just reach out or just say, like for me, it was a series of posts on Facebook just saying, you know, your silence is painful. It's deafening for me. It's killing us. So can you just reach out and make sure we're okay? That's enough. It doesn't have to be that you're at a protest. It doesn't have to be whatever. But sometimes we can bridge the divide instead of sitting back behind a wall and saying, unless white people come to me to make everything better, I'm going to stay angry. We also have to say, I'm done with anger. I'm open. If you don't understand anything about me or about my community or what my beliefs are, please just ask me. Because by doing that, I had literally about 150 to 200 individual messages per week since the protest started, since Floyd's death, of my white friends, because I made it okay for them to have the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Make it okay to have the conversation. Don't shut it down. Mm-hmm. That would be my advice to everybody, regardless of who you are, what you look like, what you believe. Make the conversation possible. Have the uncomfortable conversation. Because people do care. More people care than you realize. They're just afraid.
It's difficult to have these conversations, but it's also, it's very important, especially going in to, you know, whether it be online learning or back on campus, everything that's going on, we need to be talking to each other and to asking questions.
It makes it more personal. Like, it's not, instead of
being scared of a big movement that might turn into something violent, which is what people automatically jump to when they see Black Lives Matter. How about just, you know what, I live next door to somebody Latinx, or I live next door or I work next door to somebody who doesn't look like me. Maybe I'll just check in with them today. It could be that simple.
And I know you do that as an educator, and that's crucial just in a learning setting as well, to just to have professors who reach out to their students and who do care, not just about classwork and things, but about what's going on and about every individual, especially students of color. But I really appreciated talking with you today, and thank you for your time. And
absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Of course. And for listeners, just thank you for listening to this conversation, and I hope you also will be part of this conversation moving forward, and we'll continue to ask questions, maybe even about this podcast. And if you're a student at the College of Charleston, feel free to email us and follow us on social media. Look for us online. We're the Center for Sustainable Development at the College of Charleston. And just shoot us an email. Ask us questions. We welcome them and we learn from them as well.